So I presented two parts of the same study, and I might have just interposed the wrong first slide. So ignore the title, but this is actually exploring dating violence, abuse, and sexual risk-taking among African Americans. Slightly different title, but the same study. I'm Lynn Roberts. I have no relationships to disclose. These are my co-authors who are actually not at the conference, but are here in spirit. And this was the funding for the studies, or studies, and other acknowledgments. So at the time of this study in New York City, there were disproportionate representation of African American and Latina girls in intimate partner violence and in HIV. And these trends have persisted to the present time. And I just highlight some of them, but for sake of time, you know, just have you look at that. 8% of women killed by their intimate partners were teenagers in 1999, for example. And there was a concentration of HIV among African American and Latina youth, particularly in neighborhoods of the South Bronx where this study took place. So this study actually seeks to explore a theoretical framework. So it's kind of interesting, these presentations, how connected they are. I want to just acknowledge the earlier discussion of the reproductive justice model and framework, which is where I situate my work. I actually am an emeritus board member of Sister Song, which is credited with the establishment of that model, that framework. And I also have been interested in exploring ways, you know, to address alternatives to the health belief model. and it's very exploratory. So our theoretical framework is basically an examination of the relationships between multiple oppressions based on race, class, and gender, intimate partner violence, and HIV-related sexual risk-taking, which we believe can be moderated by the development of critical consciousness. And this framework was informed by the work of several scholars across different disciplines. I'm going to touch upon each of those briefly. The first is Dr. Maria Yellow Horse Braveheart's conceptualization of historical trauma in the 1980s as cumulative emotional and psychological wounding over the lifespan and across generations, emanating from massive group trauma experiences. And this effect of historical trauma can include unsettled emotional trauma, depression, high mortality rates, high rates of alcohol abuse, significant problems with child abuse, and domestic violence in the indigenous and Native American populations of the U.S., but certainly applicable to other groups who have experienced similar historical trauma. I also referenced Dr. Joy DeGree's theory of post-traumatic slave syndrome, which posits that centuries of slavery in the United States, followed by systemic and structural racism and oppression, have resulted in multi-generational maladaptive behaviors which originated as survival strategies, and that this syndrome continues because children whose parents suffer from PTSS will often be indoctrinated into the same behaviors long after the behaviors have lost their contextual effectiveness. Still another theory that guides this work is intersectionality, which is the term first coined by critical race and legal scholar Kimberly Crenshaw and later expounded upon by sociologist Patricia Hill Collins in her seminal book Black Feminist Thought, Knowledge, Consciousness, and the Politics of Empowerment, which basically posits that there is this interconnection between shared or multiple social identities, and that it's important to examine these holistically rather than people's single identities. Oops, sorry. And then, I'm not sure what's happening. Okay. Also, Drs. Rafael Diaz and George Ayala, who've done extensive HIV research with Latino gay men, that they have, you know, built on the work of Paul Farmer and Nancy Krieger in public health, and found that Latino gay men who experience triple oppressions, homophobia, racism, and financial hardship are more likely to be at high risk for HIV. And their pioneering work has guided HIV prevention efforts that contextualize risk in the lived experiences of marginalized groups. So given the complexity of intersectionality and the methodological and explanatory framework for linking these three axes of identity and difference, the overall study looked at surveys that were reported in a previous session here at APHA, but I'm going to report today on the collected youth narratives that inform a modest attempt to chart this unexplored territory in the context of youth dating violence. And finally, this study also considers the conceptual framing of oppression by Roderick Watts and his colleagues, which guided a pilot research intervention study, which I also will touch upon only briefly. And in this, basically these three major concepts, that of asymmetry, the unequal distribution of coveted resources, that it's both an outcome and a process that can be sustained when the disenfranchised internalize and support rather than resist it, and that it's multiple level, the oppressed in one context can be an oppressor in another context. Watts and colleagues proposed that there were these five stages of critical consciousness, or what they called socio-political development, and that highlights the role of Brazilian educator Paulo Freire's notion of critical consciousness in enhancing an awareness of socio-political as well as personal forces that influence behavior, and that these are not linear stages, but that you could, you know, be at one stage in a particular instance and another, and that you can cycle back and forth throughout these, but that these were the, you know, basic stages. And I aspire to, much like the Prochaska model of stages of change, create a stages of change for the development of critical consciousness. That's a long-term aspiration, let me just say, in my long-term career as a scholar. So let me tell you about this study. We started out to really inform the development of an intervention research study, as I mentioned, to prevent and reduce dating violence and HIV sexual risk among youth of color. We held four focus groups with 32 African American and Latino youth in a South Bronx high school. And you can see this was some time ago. The specific aims were to explore the following concepts and issues related to their experiences, racial, gender, and class discrimination, gender roles, dating patterns and behaviors, experiences of dating violence, sexual behaviors, and critical consciousness. And let me just say that was the critical consciousness came later in the survey study, not in the focus groups. So I'm just going to share with you the major themes from the focus groups. Oh, before that, because I didn't create a slide, we coded the focus groups in traditional format, iterative process, constant review, and thematic analysis, but I didn't have a slide. So, what did we find out? Youth of color described experiences of discriminatory treatment based on race, class, and gender. They told us a lot. And here are some of the examples of what they said about race discrimination. I'll just allow you to read those to yourselves. So that, you know, again, they gave us pretty rich descriptions of their actual experiences, although in a focus group people aren't reporting. They weren't asked to report on themselves. They were asked the question, do young people like you experience get treated differently because of their color of their skin is what we used, actually. And then we heard things also that, you know, kind of responded to that experience. So, for example, young men we spoke with described how the racial profiling that they, in particular, experienced leads them to feelings of anger and outrage, and they may actually adopt gestures that fit a profile rather than counter it. And I should have given a trigger warning of language, but using verbatim how they spoke. And I'll just give a little aside that when we sent these tapes to be transcribed to professional transcribers, they didn't speak fluent youth. So they sent the tapes back with all this blank because they didn't understand them, and then we actually transcribed them ourselves. We understood them perfectly well, but for some reason the professionals did not. So that was also part of our analysis iterative process. In terms of, did I do Jen? Yeah, so I'll do class next. You know, basically this was another example of what they told us of their experience with. And how pervasive it was, that it wasn't just, these weren't isolated incidences, these were things they experienced quite regularly. In terms of gender discrimination, although young men and women may be socialized to believe that men have ultimate power and control in the family and in the larger society, young women we spoke with did reject traditional gender roles and sought more financial independence, sexual freedom, and egalitarian relationships than they told us their mothers experienced. We also asked about dating violence. I'm trying to remember how we phrased those questions, but basically they revealed a lot to us. Young men and women of color described several forms of relationship abuse and ways in which men control women. And let me just say, we recruited based on heterosexual dating relationships. We weren't looking for other relationships necessarily, because our impetus was around the context in which we saw the HIV and the violence happening, and out of that concern. And also given the timing, there wasn't as much talk about same-gender relationships, certainly not among youth, and whether that would have recruited them easily in the environments in which we were in the high schools. So just want to say that our intent was looking at heterosexual couples, and that is how we recruited them. I mean, not as couples, but those who were engaged in heterosexual relationships. Same gender relationships. Some young women in our groups also reported physical abuse of male partners, but females in general did not appear to exercise the same level of power and control in their dating relationships as the males did. Young men and women of color described several forms of relationship abuse, and again, ways in which men control women. And let me just say, with this young female, when she talked about not telling her mother, in this instance she was struck by her boyfriend or a male partner, and the reason she didn't tell it to anyone, she told us, was that she was fearful that her brothers would retaliate and that they would go to jail. So I just want to also further contextualize the things that we were told, because it's significant for our larger study. And in terms of sexual coercion and sexual assault, in keeping with traditional gender role scripts and unspoken but understood rules for dating, both young men and young women of color viewed sex as a means of social exchange. And in this instance, two males in the group, or young men in the group, spoke about interactions that they thought were likely to occur. Again, they weren't speaking of themselves. And in this exchange, describing an instance of you know, using psychological pressure and also drug use to force young women to have sex against their will, and a pretty graphic example that they shared in this focus group. And I will say that young women of color also reported pressuring their male dating partners to have sex. But these were just some of the examples. So they talked about that happening. And then on safer sex, condoms are the preferred method of protection that the youth talked about. Youth of color tended to think males and females should both be involved in deciding whether or not to use protection, but the female is ultimately held responsible for what happens. And then in terms of their critical consciousness development, we did hear some instances where, you know, there was this recognition of the double standard and expressed remorse for how young women are treated in the school setting, and, you know, and examples were shared. And also how some young women of color valued their financial independence on dates as a protection, perhaps, against sexual coercion. And these are just some of the examples of what they shared in these focus groups. So what we took away from these listening sessions, if you will, was that youth of color do experience multiple and intersecting forms of oppression based on their race, their class, and their gender, that they also indicate resilience and resistance to what they experience, and it is in this context that they are also both victims and perpetrators, or harm doers, depending on people's preferred language, in their dating relationships. And that they also engage in risky sexual behaviors. And from this, it is proposed, we examine more carefully and explicitly the impact of those experiences of discrimination and its impact on dating violence and in turn on HIV risk behaviors. And in terms of the critical consciousness, just looking through literature, how that might be conceptualized has to do with system blame, looking at structural causes rather than individual ones, having a group identity with others, which can be based on race or gender or sexuality, having self-efficacy, and participating in social action around the experiences of discrimination. This is the model I've sought to test. And although the focus group informed the surveys, which I'm not reporting on here, much of what we took from the focus groups went into trying to measure this five-stage model of critical consciousness. It hasn't been factor analyzed yet, but just what one of the handouts gives you all 10, but I'm just going to show you one. So the handouts are tied to this session. You can actually look at the results for all 10 of the vignettes, but the vignettes came, and you can even almost recognize this one directly from the focus groups. And we had others looking at violence against women, race discrimination, class discrimination, you know, there were different examples. And then basically the response scale being looking, if you recall from the five stages of Watts's model, there's nothing wrong with the situation, which would be, you know, that there isn't asymmetry, that there is something wrong, but there's nothing that can be done about it, there's something wrong and it's possible something could be done about it, to the liberation stage, there's something wrong with this and I can join with others to do something about it. To this idea, you know, could we examine that? And then, you know, this is, you know, most of the respondents across all 10 responded in the number 3 range, or responded to the number 3 selection. It wasn't true with this one. It's interesting that in singling this one out, the gender implication, just that male's not seeing something wrong with this situation. So in terms of recommendations, you know, thinking that just how important it would be to examine the unduly effects of discrimination. It hasn't been examined in the literature, and certainly hasn't been examined in terms of youth and either HIV or dating violence, to my knowledge and my reviewing. And that communication campaigns, you know, should address this overlapping experience of oppression with dating violence and health risk behaviors, in particular around HIV and other STIs. And to encourage researchers and those who fund research to look more closely at critical consciousness as a potential for intervention with youth, because it has been explored with, you know, adults in terms of HIV risk. And that also, if we were to go forward with looking at, because I'm going to share also a curriculum model that we actually introduced in this same school environment, that if you're going to engage youth in deconstructing oppression in their lives, that you have to have sustained commitments to work with them. Like, it's not enough to talk about those issues if you aren't also going to stay involved with them to work through them, because there are examples of, you know, where that's been problematic if folks are kind of left, I guess, more raw from sharing those experiences, those stories, but not having either an environment that provides support. And that's where I think social workers, as was mentioned earlier, could come in real handy. But, you know, being able to also give them opportunities to actually exercise their political agency. So in terms of future research, that there be large, you know, multi-method studies, you know, not just surveys, but also qualitative means for exploring these aspects. Multiple sites to capture geographic diversity. We only sampled African American and Latino youth in the South Bronx, but there wasn't a comparative sample of other youth who also, we'd imagine, would have different or none or little experience of discrimination given the nature of what discrimination entails. But that we also would want to look at longitudinal studies and intervention studies throughout.